The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Derek Frost from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading to you from the Triangle Business Journal. And we start with the cover of the special report on the front page, 2019 Life Sciences Awards. As researchers across the Triangle continue their work in the laboratories and managers push workers to move development through the pipeline, TBJ recognizes a few individuals and companies for work performed in the industry. And we'll start with the first article for the Lifetime Achievement winner. The headline, Doherty, a Catalyst for Local VC Sea Change, and this is written by Lauren Onasorge. When Dennis Doherty learned he was Triangle Business Journal's Life Sciences Lifetime Achievement Award winner, his reaction was, "You've got the wrong guy." But in fact, he has played a key role in the growth of numerous life sciences companies in the Triangle. For more than three decades, Doherty, founder of Durham's oldest venture capital firm, InterSouth Partners, has been shaking trees, securing capital, and deploying it to companies in hopes of finding unicorns. Today, it's winding down as its remaining funds are earmarked toward portfolio companies and not new ventures. But its living legacy continues to impact the Triangle startup scene, as it legitimized early ideas and funneled in the capital needed to create some of the region's success stories. In an interview, Doherty calls it a sea change, pointing to a recent dinner where 25 investors from throughout the region got together to talk shop. 25 years ago, you could have had that meeting in a closet with a table and two chairs, he says. What a terrific thing in the Triangle to have all these smart people gathered around a table. Doherty and his co-founder, Roy Rodwell, were small business consultants at what's now Deloitte when they decided to start InterSouth in 1985, then a completely new business model in the Triangle. They had both seen clients who wanted to raise venture capital, but options were non-existent. Venture capitalists weren't getting on planes from Silicon Valley, so it occurred to Doherty that a fund located in the Triangle would have virtually no competition when it came to investing in innovation in the Southeast. The pair approached Duke University, who pledged to back them if they could get a real venture capital fund behind the venture. And that's where Eugene Kleiner came in. The late co-founder of venture capital powerhouse Kleiner Perkins heard their pitch and signed on. The first fund was just a $6.4 million raise. In 1989, InterSouth Partners II closed and Mitch Mumma came on board. And despite some hurdles, such as when, after some bad returns, Kleiner told him, according to Mumma's recollection, to just fold the tent. InterSouth survived and at times truly thrived. Within weeks of that Kleiner conversation, InterSouth had its first IPO exit in Integrated Silicon Solution, turning a $630,000 seed investment into $13 million. Not only did InterSouth personally invest in ventures in the Southeast, but it also moved to reel in investors from elsewhere, standing in as the local due diligence arm as it introduced Silicon Valley venture capitalists to the Triangle. Today, InterSouth is still supporting about a dozen companies with about $20 million in reserve, Doherty says. Some have existing payout agreements through 2024. He says he does not plan to raise another fund. Mitch Mumma might, but with an old guy, Doherty jokes. But I'm an old guy, Doherty jokes. In the meantime, there are many more funds available today than when InterSouth started, and there could be more, he says. Doherty suggests that in order to reel in more venture capitalists, the state could be a little more aggressive about backing venture funds that will back deals in North Carolina, he says. And the state needs more capital, he says, particularly seed and early stage investment. The regulatory nature of life sciences means entrepreneurs have to raise a great deal of capital to succeed. Doherty's advice to those entrepreneurs, don't just rely on equity firms. The ones I've seen that work best get a lot of leverage from non-dilutive capital, from grants and partnerships, he says. As for advice for those seeking capital, Doherty says to avoid creating unrealistic expectations in your pitch. Anybody who comes in and says, we're going to make 100 times your money, we know it's unrealistic, he says. And hang in there. It's always hard. It's always really hard, and you always think it's not going to come together, but then it does, Doherty says. Name, Dennis Doherty. Company, InterSouth Partners. Title, Managing Partner, Birthplace, Oklahoma City. Education, Oklahoma City University. Age of firm, 35 years. Family members, wife Nancy, son DJ, stepson Chuck Stubbs. First job, grocery clerk, A&P. Complete the following statement. Since I joined the company, I am most proud of all the talented people that work at InterSouth and our common bond of helping young companies succeed. Succinctly, talk about one major professional accomplishment in the past year. I am mostly retired now, but we backed over 100 companies and stayed the course of backing early stage companies in this region. What does the Triangle need to do to nurture an even more vibrant atmosphere for a thriving life sciences community? I think the region's startup community still needs seed and early stage investors. The angel community here is great, but not as organized as it could be for startup companies. Bigger funds who seek later stage companies can travel here, but seed money is usually sourced locally. Do you have a mentor? If so, what is the best piece of advice you've ever received from him or her? Yes, several. Always take the money. And if time permits, we'll come back and read some of the individual and company awards. Now we turn to Biz, a quick glance at Triangle Happenings, written by Managing Editor Dane Huffman. Customers want it now, and by that they mean right now. The pace of change is increasing, and how businesses respond will be a good predictor of their future. According to a forum the Greater Raleigh Chamber of Commerce held May 15th that was titled, What Will the Triangle Look Like in 20 Years? Remember when next week was okay? We'll get it to you next week, said Ted Abernathy, managing partner of Economic Leadership, an economic strategy company. We want it now, not 5 minutes from now, but now. During his speech, 4,000 new websites hit the internet, 228 billion text messages were sent, and 3 million tweets were read, he said. Could anyone have imagined 20 years ago that today there would be 4.1 billion people on the internet and 2.5 billion using something called smartphones? By 2021, 2 billion people will be using digital assistants such as Alexa, Siri, and Google Home, Abernathy said. While the Triangle area has done well economically over the last 20 years, these constant and quick changes have caused every industry to be at some stage of disruption and cast doubt on the next 20 years. For instance, public schools and higher education hasn't changed much over the years to keep pace, said Catherine Truitt, the chancellor of Western Governors University, North Carolina, an online nonprofit university with an office in Durham. We're paying the price with a lack of talent, she said. Our economy is not going to be able to continue to grow at the pace it's growing if we don't start graduating more people from college who are career ready. Abernathy said there are successful education models out there, but they haven't been broadly scaled because of resistance to change. I'm not a believer in one size fits all, but we're going to have to reshape the way we adjust to the future, he said. Raleigh history comes alive in unique performances by Burning Coal Theater. Biz was surprised to learn the Burning Coal Theater would perform at Raleigh's Oakwood Cemetery, May 17 through 19. Turns out the local thespians have done performances there before and have a special celebration for Oakwood's 150th year about famous people buried there. One is Henry Sewell. After the Capitol burned in 1831, Fayetteville nearly lured the government, but Sewell gained an appropriation of $50,000 for a new Capitol and secured Raleigh's future. Local firm plays a big role in PGA Championship. It'll be a busy weekend for some members of a local firm when the PGA Championship is played at Bethpage Black on Long Island, New York. The sports and events team from Stewart, a Raleigh engineering firm, won the contract for the overlay work for this and many other PGA events. The overlay contract means Stewart takes the lead on creating the infrastructure needed for a major sporting event, a heavy lift at Bethpage, a state park that doesn't have amenities built in for 40,000 visitors on a given day. Stewart's Jeff Harkey and Ben Hood have led the effort, which had been underway for more than 2 years. They ramped up efforts in February, and Harkey says it was so frigid, the team could barely drive stakes in the ground. Stewart will do the PGA Championship through 2022, as well as multiple other PGA events. It's really a big undertaking, Harkey says. Our specialty is taking all those needs, synthesizing that into a master plan, and then going into a detailed design. old building coming back to life on Blunt Street, a dilapidated building that was once in the center of Raleigh's black business district is getting a makeover. Valerie Fields will put her four-person PR pros team at 515 South Blunt Street after renovating the building. She first met the owner about 25 years ago when it was a trophy studio. The building passed on to his son, who held a photography studio there but was injured in a car accident. Fields hopes to be in the building by the end of the summer, but notes there is plenty to be done, including repairing the roof so the rain doesn't pour in. It's one of those things where everybody wins, Fields says. The neighborhood wins, and that community gets restored. Engineers gawk, learn on visit to Apex Robotics firm. An Apex company at the forefront of the robotics revolution recently had a chance to show off its expanded home and talk shop with its industry peers. ATI Industrial Automation spent $12 million to add 68,000 square feet. The company says it has been growing roughly 20% per year over the last 3 years. It now employs 575 people at the facility, double what it had 2 years ago. On May 9, the company welcomed 200 people, including engineers from around the country, for its Automation Expo. We manufacture from here, we design from here, and we sell from here, CEO Robert Little says. In order to advance our robotic products and maintain our leadership position in the industry, we need a state-of-the-art facility. Sounds like a fascinating day in a fast-growing industry, and we're just hoping the robots weren't being trained to write biz. UNC student helps uninsured find affordable health care. No one doubts that health care is complicated, especially for those who lack insurance, and a student at UNC Chapel Hill decided to do something about it. It basically started when I learned that 10% of the U.S. population was uninsured and can't access affordable care, Anish Agarwal says. That was really shocking to me. So Agarwal launched a mobile application called Clinic Locators, a free application that provides resources and locations of about 1,200 affordable, free, or community clinics in the country. He says the locations are selected for their specific focus on providing care for the uninsured. In addition, Agarwal says the app is intended as a public service and is available for download on multiple operating systems. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to On Finance, Startups, and Transportation, written by Lauren Onasorge. Archive Social scores growth equity investor. Many of the original shareholders are gone at Archive Social as a private equity group has entered the picture to scale the company. CEO and founder of Archive Social, Anil Chawla, says the company has found its groove and is preparing to scale. Armed with its first big funder from Level Equity, a PE firm based in New York and San Francisco, Archive Social provides social media archiving software for government agencies, law enforcement officials, and K-12 school districts. In a deal worth $53 million, Chawla says many of the shareholders have cashed out their stake, but the Level Equity deal also pumps additional capital into the company. The company would not disclose the dollar amounts paid to shareholders or pumped into the company. Archive Social has 65 people working out of two floors of the Trust Building in downtown Durham, and Chawla says the company has hit our stride, boosted by the political climate on social media. When every tweet from President Donald Trump becomes its own headline, it's suddenly very easy to see the archiving problem the technology solves, and it's easier for outside backers to see the opportunity ahead. Where we are in terms of our growth curve, our revenue, we're a little more open-minded about taking outside investment, Chawla says. Level Equity actually approached Archive Social, he adds. We met early this year, Chawla says, and that's where we kicked off this idea. We had revenue from day one, he says, but we were figuring out this market. We were really creating this market. The need was always there, but the market didn't understand. Fast forward to today, Chawla says, and you can look at everyone from the president on down and see how important it is to keep social media on record. While Archive Social doesn't release its revenue numbers, he calls it significant. The company, which had 1,000 customers 18 months ago, now has 2,000. We're at a point where we're at a different place, where you reevaluate your growth, Chawla says. What's exciting for us with this investment, we can say to the market that Archive Social is here to stay. We are the platform. Investors, founders near settlement in Lookout Capital case. After two mediation sessions and a year and a half's worth of court-filed accusations, the litigation surrounding a Raleigh investment firm appears to be ending. A motion to approve a settlement has been jointly filed in North Carolina Business Court. The proposed terms, according to a brief in support of the filing submitted May 8th, include Lookout Capital founders Mirette and William Moore agreeing to resign as managers of Lookout and its related entities. The Moores have also agreed to make a payment of $750,000 to Lookout. Plaintiffs John Kane Jr. and Michael O'Donnell filed the suit November 13, 2017, alleging that as investors and partners in Lookout Capital, they were misled, misinformed, and ultimately fleeced due to unsuitability, mismanagement, and self-dealing. Kane and O'Donnell targeted Lookout founders Mirette Moore and his father, William Bill Moore, along with Tidewater Equity Partners. Kane was director of investor relations and an operating partner at Lookout. O'Donnell was an operating partner and member of its advisory board. The Moores have denied any wrongdoing. How tech is influencing business. The latest study from Insight Enterprises, Inc. aims to show how information technology decision makers are managing technology and working to transform through it. But with ever-increasing technology comes the growing challenge of security. The 2019 Insight Intelligent Technology Index found that security and/or data privacy is the greatest challenge for digital innovation initiatives. The findings come from an online survey of 400 IT professionals in the U.S. and Canada working at enterprise companies ranging from at least 1,000 employees to more than 5,000 employees. And in a graph, we have the ranking of digital innovation challenges. And of the total respondents, security and or data privacy, 48%. Upfront costs, 38%. Expertise in new technology, 32%. Infrastructure delays, 31%. Standards integration architecture, 29%. Monthly costs, 28%. And insufficient budget, 28%. Chapel Hill investor scores in Beyond Meat IPO. With the ring of a bell, a Chapel Hill investor saw a windfall this month as California plant-based protein company Beyond Meat went public on the NASDAQ May 1. Greg Boland, co-founder of Chapel Hill's Union Grove Venture Partners, has served on the company's board since 2013. He, through Union Grove, has consistently invested in Beyond Meat through the years, controlling more than 1.6% of the shares pre-IPO. On the first day of May, the investments paid off when the company opened to trade at $46 per share, nearly twice its IPO price of $25, which was already at the high end of its expected range. By May 13, shares were just over $68. Boland calls it a great outcome for the most exciting company I've ever been involved with. Based on Boland's 797,224 shares under ownership, his stake would be worth about $58 million on paper. Like most deals, however, the shares are most likely under a lockup period for a time. Boland says it's not just about the money. It's a company that's changing the world and making the world a better place, he says. Quarry opponents want a seat on the RDU board. Save RDU Forest signs peppered the crowd at the May 7 Raleigh City Council meeting, where representatives from the Sierra Club spoke out against Raleigh-Durham International Airport's plan to lease a tract of land to Wake Stone Corporation for a rock quarry. The plan is estimated to generate about $24 million for the airport. Opponents say it conflicts with sensitive forest land near Umpstead State Park. Two Sierra Club Capital Group speakers, Elizabeth Adams and Hua Wang, asked for a representation on the RDU board, which approved the lease deal March 1. The city took no action on the petitions. And now we turn to On Healthcare and Education, written by Seth Thomas Gulledge. Numbers show deep impact of area universities. The Triangle's research universities are producing more than 40 companies per year, as well as thousands of inventions, patents, and millions in licensing revenue. The good news for the local economy is that in all those categories, the numbers are continuing to grow, as long as administrators can keep finding ways to bring in research dollars. In 2018, Duke University, NC State University, and UNC Chapel Hill collectively produced 41 spin-out companies, joining the hundreds of previous companies stemming from local university research. Many of those have gone on to become successful companies, such as Duke spin-out Element Genomics, which was acquired in April 2018 for $30 million. Those ideas are making millions for the universities, which collectively raked in over $63 million last year through license revenue. Duke, which led in licensing revenue, brought in $51 million alone. But each year's success is only adding to the cumulative effect that the universities are having. For example, according to UNC data, the university has launched 613 startups since 1958, 75% of which are still active. Of those 462 active startups, 85% are headquartered in North Carolina. In the last year, the cumulative revenue of all UNC active startups totaled $11.3 billion and employed more than 71,000. The overall pace has increased in the past few years. Between 2014 to 2018, 255 companies were formed. Licensing revenue, too, has exploded. Between 2009 to 2013, license revenue was reported at $13.3 million. In the last 5 years, the revenue totaled $26.6 million. Total patents increased from 135 in the first period to 267 in the most recent period, a 98% increase. Raleigh Pharma relabeling drugs expects more sales. With approval in hand to change the label on one of its drugs, a Triangle Pharmaceutical company is expecting an uptick in sales. MERS North America has received a nod from the U.S. Food and Drug Administration for the broadening of an indication for Xeomin. The second time in less than a year, the drug's label has expanded. Xeomin is prescribed for the treatment of blepharospasm, involuntary blinking, chronic sialorrhea, drooling, cervical dystonia, and upper limb spasticity in adults. The drug was approved by the FDA in 2010 for blepharospasm and has since been approved for the additional indications. And by the way, it's spelled X-E-O-M-I-N. Since the drug was approved, it has required patients to undergo Botox treatment prior to Xeomin. The recent approval will make the drug a first-line treatment. Kevin O'Brien, head of neurosciences and a MERS vice president, says the change is expected to make the drug more accessible. "We're really confident this will increase use," he says. State approves UNC Duke request to expand surgical projects. Two of the Triangle's health systems have been tapped by the state to expand surgical infrastructure in Orange County to a tune of more than $17 million. The NC Department of Health and Human Services, NCDHHS, has conditionally approved three applications from UNC Health and one from Duke Health for more surgical operating rooms in the county, as per the need reflected in the 2018 State Medical Facilities Plan. The plan called for six more operating rooms in the county. UNC applied to fill all six, and Duke applied for two, which it received. UNC's projects all received approval, though two received half the rooms they sought. Duke's project is the most ambitious, proposing to build a $12.8 million ambulatory surgery center with two operating rooms and two procedure rooms. Its application estimated it would be complete in 2021. UNC's application proposed to construct a $4.3 million surgery center with two operating rooms in Chapel Hill. That project received approval for both rooms and was estimated to be complete in 2021. The system also proposed to add two operating rooms to its Hillsboro campus at a cost of $2.1 million and another two operating rooms on its Chapel Hill campus, totaling just under $400,000. Both projects were estimated to be complete in 2020. Instead of receiving approval for four rooms, the system was approved just one extra operating room in each hospital. Either system or another concerned party have the option to appeal the results with the state. Changing workforce brings aha moment for Triangle Firm. Falling in line with a growing national trend, Triangle job seekers can now find a job at a prominent engineering firm without a four-year degree. CEPI Engineering, a Raleigh-based engineering and construction management firm, has announced that four-year degrees are no longer a basic qualification for potential employees. That announcement joins CEPI with the ranks of companies now recognizing that highly skilled positions can be filled by prospects armed with associate's degrees. President and CEO CEPI Saidi says the decision to remove the qualification came from a panel discussion when someone asked about qualifications. I've seen people who do great work and were brilliant, people I've relied on heavily, who didn't have a four-year degree, she says. When I heard that, it was one of those aha moments. The move also presents strategic importance for the firm, which Saidi says is competing for talent in a tight labor market. UNC Duke get millions from feds to battle venereal disease. Every year, millions of Americans suffer from sexually transmitted diseases. Now, UNC Chapel Hill, Duke University, and NC State University are at the heart of a $41.6 million push by the National Institutes of Health to develop vaccines that prevent the spread of STDs. The NIH announced a massive series of grants establishing four cooperative research centers focusing on developing vaccines for syphilis, gonorrhea, and chlamydia. Each of the centers will receive about $10.7 million for research. One of those centers is based at UNC Health, where Dr. Toni Darville and her team will seek to create a vaccine for chlamydia. They will follow a group of women considered high risk of reinfection following antibiotic treatment to study their immune response. Another center is co-led by Duke's Human Vaccine Institute and the University of Connecticut, which will seek to create a vaccine for syphilis. And now we turn to On Real Estate, written by Cliff Barnes. Wegmans acquires land in Wake Forest. Wegmans Food Markets, the New York-based grocery store, is now one step closer to announcing the opening of its next Triangle location. The grocer, which said last October that it planned to open a store in Wake Forest, has now finalized the purchase of more than 69 acres for $8.5 million. Forbes Real Estate of Sanford sold the property on Ligon Mill Road off NC 98 in Wake Forest to the family-owned Rochester, New York company, which is expanding rapidly into the Triangle. Wegmans recently announced its first location in North Carolina will open in Raleigh on September 29. That 104,000-square-foot location is on Wake Forest Road at the Midtown East Shopping Center. Plans are also moving forward for two locations in Cary, one in Chapel Hill, one in Holly Springs, and now this one in Wake Forest. The Wake Forest site is expected to be similar in size and design to the Raleigh store and other new Wegmans stores. Now that the approvals are in place and the property purchased, the company has said it would be announcing a timeline soon for the opening of the store. Plans are for the Wegmans in Wake Forest to be part of a larger mixed-use development to be built by Stiles, a Florida-based commercial real estate firm that has a development office in Charlotte. Stiles has recent history in Raleigh as it partnered with Grub Ventures to build the Carolinian on Glenwood, a luxury apartment complex. Wegmans currently has 99 stores in New York, Pennsylvania, Massachusetts, Maryland, New Jersey, and Virginia. Florida firm plans more apartments for Morrisville. More apartments are coming to the Triangle, this time near a lake in Morrisville. A Florida company with a nearby property has purchased a 12.68-acre lot close to Lake Crabtree for $4 million, with plans for a 300-unit multifamily apartment complex. Bainbridge Companies of Wellington, Florida, bought the property from Southport Business Park LLC, which owns most of the parcels of the Southport Business Park, a complex of 17 buildings on more than 100 acres. Bainbridge also owns Bainbridge Lake Crabtree, luxury apartments at 2599 Evans Road, across the street from the newly purchased property, which has no address yet. The Bainbridge Lake Crabtree website advertises three-bedroom apartments with 1,350 square feet for rent at $1,820 per month. The purchase underscores the rising interest in property in the core of the Triangle, which puts residents closer to the job sites in Research Triangle Park. The site is also within easy reach of Weston Parkway in Cary, which is packed with major employers. The site plan that was approved by the town of Morrisville indicates that the new complex will be named Bainbridge Aviation Crossing, and it will face McCrimmon Parkway once it is extended to Aviation Parkway. The plan shows that there will be 502 parking spaces. At least 418 are required. More than half of the apartments will have two bedrooms, including the carriage units. Plans are for 127 one-bedroom apartments and 21 three-bedroom apartments. The brick veneer and fiber cement siding buildings will be four stories. Features include a courtyard, a dog park, and an activity center. Construction has not begun as the building permit process is ongoing. Withers, Ravenall of Cary is the engineering firm for the project. Bainbridge has offices and properties in Charlotte and Raleigh, including North Hills at Town Center on Millbrook Green Drive. Raleigh developer to build office park in Holly Springs. A Raleigh real estate development company will take the lead on developing a large patch of land in Holly Springs. Trustwell Property Group has entered into a contract with Duke Energy Progress to develop its 140 acres in the Holly Springs Business Park. The park is located on NC Highway 55 and is less than 3 miles from the Triangle Expressway. The land has a tax-assessed value of $5.7 million and was owned by Carolina Power and Light before the company was acquired by Duke Energy. Duke Energy owns more than 2,000 acres nearby worth north of $30 million. Zoned for research technology, the tract has been dubbed Oakview Innovation Park and is a state-certified site for large-scale manufacturing and biopharma companies' campuses. Located in between Seqirus, the second largest vaccine company in the world, and a planned residential development, the property could yield more than 1 million square feet of new office, industrial, and manufacturing space. Two firms grab space at Raleigh's Union Station. The Raleigh City Council has authorized the lease of two suites of the Raleigh Union Station that were not needed for the city's purposes. ORA Architecture, a commercial architecture firm, and Spec One Specified Systems, which offers products to design firms and construction companies, were chosen after the city advertised the space for the required 30 days. Both are local companies that serve wide markets. Suite 108A, which encompasses 1,211 square feet, will be the home of ORA Architecture. The rent starts at $27,853 per year and rises 3% each year of the lease, which runs for 5 years and 3 months with an option for 4 years and 8 months more. Spec 1 will occupy the 777-square-foot suite 108B. The same terms apply, including the $23 per square foot rent, which comes out to $17,871 the first year. Firm started by Best Buy founder acquires complex. A Raleigh office complex has been sold again. The Spring Forest Business Center, located at 3100 and 3200 Spring Forest Road, was sold for $22.25 million. The office buildings were built in the 1980s and renovated in 2005. Founders Properties of Minnetonka, Minnesota, bought the nearly 15 acres from Somerset Properties of Pennsylvania. Minnetonka is located 8 miles west of Minneapolis, and the company was founded by Best Buy founder Richard Schulz and Opus founder Gerald Rauenhorst. Somerset bought the properties in 2017 as part of a larger deal that included 9 buildings at Perimeter Park in Morrisville. That property is shown in county documents as still being owned by Somerset. The 3100 Spring Forest Road property has an assessed value of more than $8.4 million, and the 3200 property has an assessed value of more than $6 million. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to a better world inside the Triangle's nonprofit scene. First, we have an article written by Seth Thomas Gulledge, the headline, First Tee Looks to Establish Home Turf. The First Tee of the Triangle has spent years teaching local youth everything about golf, from the big things people spend lifetimes trying to perfect, like putting and patience, to the smaller issues like rules and etiquette. But there's nothing small about its next goal, raising $6.5 million by the end of the year. Brandon Baker, president and executive director of the local First Tee chapter, believes it can be done. And the program has the backing of business leaders such as Bob Hadley, retired Paragon Bank CEO, and the campaign chair, and John McConnell, founder and owner of McConnell Golf. According to Baker, First Tee started in the Triangle about 15 years ago and has grown steadily since. The program's popularity, however, has become a challenge as it relies on a generous but not perfectly reliable network of courses and spaces throughout the area. The one thing that we've lacked from day one is a place that our kids and families can call our own, he says. That lack of space has become problematic. The organization now serves more than 1,600 kids, and Baker says there is a waiting list of about 200, mostly related to space limitations. When you still have 200-plus kids who want to be in it but can't, it makes this important, he says. We're having an impact and we're changing lives, but there are still kids who want to be a part of that but can't. That's the real problem. How do we help all the kids who want to be helped? Thanks to an opportunity brought by McConnell, First Tee has a shot at establishing its home turf. As the owner of Triangle Golf Complex, a public driving range off Leesville Road in Northwest Raleigh, McConnell says he thought it would be perfect for First Tee's first home. The location is in need of some renovations, culminating in the $6.5 million price tag. The land is being sold at market rate at a cost of $4 million, though the sale comes with an undisclosed but generous donation from McConnell back to the organization. Obviously, I have an affinity and love for golf, McConnell says. A lot of these kids coming out of First Tee get life skills they might not get elsewhere, helping them be more successful in life. Golf becomes a fundamental part of that, and hopefully these kids one day will join somewhere close. The rest of the funding will go toward construction of a new clubhouse with integrated learning spaces and classrooms, as well as the resurrection of a par 3 course that once existed on the property. The new course is being designed by Gil Hance, a golf course architect, most recently heralded for the redesign of Pinehurst No. 4. Between the organization's new home is still a hefty price tag, something Baker notes is a bit above the organization's typical scale. For us, $6.5 million is a very big and aggressive goal relative to our organization's size, he says. It's absolutely going to take every single person around our table to be involved and incredibly generous with their gifts and their time, but we think it's going to take a larger community involvement to get it done for us. To achieve that, Baker said First Tee is primarily relying on a campaign committee of business leaders who have supported the program, leveraging personal connections during the first phase of the campaign. Early large check donors include organizations such as Blue Cross and Blue Shield of North Carolina, Paragon Bank, and McConnell Golf. In subsequent phases of the campaign, Baker says they will be looking toward community support. Whether it's 7-digit gifts, 6-digit gifts, or even $100 gifts, when we get down to the end, we're going to be trying to get across the finish line, he says. Every one of those dollars is going to make a difference. And in nonprofit notes, The Foundation's Victory Ride coming up in Raleigh. The V Foundation's second Victory Ride to Cure Cancer is scheduled for May 18, with the cycling event beginning and ending at NC State University. The ride includes routes that run 10, 30, 60, and 100 miles. All of the funds raised by the riders will benefit the Duke Cancer Institute, UNC Lineberger Comprehensive Cancer Center, and the Wake Forest Baptist Health Comprehensive Cancer Center, or National Cancer Research. George Hincappy, who competed in the Tour de France 17 times, is the Grand Marshal. Opening ceremonies begin at 7:50 a.m., with rides beginning later in the morning. There will be local breweries and food trucks on tap for the riders at the end. Last year, there were more than 500 riders involved, and the event raised around $200,000. The V Foundation was launched by former NC State men's basketball coach Jim Valvano, who died from cancer in 1993. Blue Cross NC invests $1.5 million to improve kids' health. Blue Cross and Blue Shield of North Carolina is investing $1.5 million to expand the MATCH program, motivating adolescents with technology to choose health, to nearly 5,000 additional North Carolina 7th grade students. The school-based program is designed to teach healthy eating and increased physical activity in adolescents. The program will be taught to approximately 11,000 seventh grade students in North Carolina starting in August. With the addition of the new investment, Match will be taught in a total of 74 urban, rural, and suburban schools across 14 school districts in North Carolina. According to the Centers for Disease Control, among adolescents in the state, 15.2% are considered overweight, while 12.5% are considered obese. Duke Energy makes gift to program giving books to kids. Duke Energy has given Book Harvest a grant of $10,000 to support an expansion of the program into Bladen and Columbus counties after those counties in eastern North Carolina were hit hard by Hurricane Florence. For 8 years, Book Harvest has provided books for Triangle students to read over the summer so they keep their reading skills sharp in the months they're out of school. This summer, the program will reach 43 schools in 4 counties and more than 16,000 students. Indira Everett, district manager at Duke Energy, said her company was thrilled to support the program for the 5th straight year. "We can't wait to send Bladen and Columbus County students off with a summer full of stories they can use to continue learning and to build their own home libraries," she said. And finally, these kids get a close-up look at the world of medical technology. April 25 was Take Your Child to Work Day, and the Cary location of Siemens Health and Ears gave kids an inside look at medical technology that day. The firm worked with the American Society of Radiologic Technologists to host 100 children from the 4th grade to the 8th grade in an 8-hour session. The goal was to teach the children about treating patients through the use of medical imaging, radiation therapy, and lab diagnostic technologies. Nancy Wozniak, Vice President for Education and Workforce Solutions at Siemens, said, "The fun and interactive experience teaches our children more about radiology, what Siemens Health and Ears does, and how our company positively impacts the world of healthcare." And now we turn to the Viewpoint page to read the editor's notebook written by Sugata Mukherjee, editor of the Triangle Business Journal. The headline, "Need to Harvest Triangle's Diverse Young Talent." After judging thousands and thousands of nominations for 20-plus years for our annual recognition events across multiple industries, one would think there would be very few things that would surprise me in what I read in the nominations. Not so this time around. After reading the nearly 250 nominations for our 2019 40 Under 40 Awards, I'm assuming that reading, evaluating, and ranking these individuals was tough for this year's 5 other judges. This year was particularly tough for me. We announced the 2019 winners in the last few days. That's because of the strength of this year's nominees. They came from all walks of life, from North Carolina to faraway lands such as Iran and Turkey. They work at different industries, from robotics to genome cell research, from marketing to nonprofit leadership. They're involved in a number of local charities and are leading campaigns, pledges, doing pro bono work, and forcing their employers to engage with our community's needs. And they have checked off all these accomplishments before they turned 40. What struck me this year was the sheer volume of community-centric charitable causes these individuals are involved with on a daily basis. One candidate's nomination listed specific duties at 13 charitable institutions in the past year. Collectively, that individual helped raise more than $2 million and grow the membership base by about 30% during the 2017 to 2019 period. But that was hardly the exception among the nominations. But their volunteerism was driven by the success at work and their drive and belief to be successful in everything they touch. As a community, we must harvest the minds of these talented individuals working alongside us. They need to be brought together in a group setting and given some problem-solving duties, such as issues surrounding light rail in the Triangle, the potential for an arena in downtown Raleigh, housing affordability across our primary counties, the use of artificial intelligence in public policy and other subjects to keep our work-life balance intact in the Triangle. From the 250 nominations I read this year, I would guess most of them are ready to tackle challenges. All we have to do is offer them a seat at the table. It would be a shame to not let this amount of talent be put to use for a greater good. And also, we're going to read a column, a Viewpoint column written by Burke Kuntz, who is a financial advisor with Raymond James & Associates Raleigh office. The headline, "My Eye-Opening 24 Hours in Omaha, Nebraska." After many years away, I returned to Omaha, Nebraska this year for the Berkshire Hathaway annual meeting. Buffett calls it Woodstock for capitalists, but it more closely resembles a multi-class reunion weekend for a large Midwestern university with a strong engineering school, maybe Purdue. There was at least one guy there with a parrot on his shoulder. I guess he was looking for Jimmy Buffett. Here's how I spent my roughly 24 hours in Omaha. 12:45 p.m. Arrive at Le Bullion in Omaha's Old Market section to join friends and former colleagues for lunch of burgers and Cronenborgs. The burgers prompt a discussion of the recent IPO of Beyond Meat, the maker of plant-based meats. Someone noted the new market capitalization was greater than the market value of all of the peas in the United States, which we coined the P-to-P ratio. This is called analyst humor. 5 p.m. Omaha Country Club for a cocktail party. Discussion of the cannabis craze, but of course we focused on the therapeutic properties of CBD and not so much about THC, about which no one seemed to know anything. 8:30 p.m. Dinner at Jam's. Stories about the good old days, war stories, etc. 11:30 p.m. Back to the hotel. Saturday, 7:15 a.m., Uber departs for the CHI Health Center, where about 30,000 people are lining up to go inside. 9 a.m., the Q&A opens. On the market. In the first question posed to Berkshire Hathaway Vice Chairman Charlie Munger about today's investing environment, his response was that it was like an old man's expectation of his sex life. It was just not going to be what it was once like under different conditions. On America and socialism, Buffett said he was a card-carrying capitalist and believed part of what made America special was the market system and the rule of law. Both he and Munger said capitalism involved taking care of people who get left behind. Buffett said he did not believe the country would embrace socialism in 2020, 2040, or 2060. On leverage. A leveraged business will beat an unleveraged business most of the time in a good business. Nonetheless, they try to avoid excess leverage because bad things happen even to really smart people. Use the long-term capital management example, it all turned to pumpkins and mice, Buffett said. On investing, Buffett said it all goes back to Aesop and a bird in the hand is worth two in the bush. He said success in investing was tied to the ability to discern how many birds were actually in the bush, how healthy the bush was, and whether you could actually reach the bush. On Amazon and Google, Munger said he gives himself a pass on missing Amazon early because Bezos is a miracle worker. On the other hand, Munger said he was a horse's ass for missing Google because they were already using it internally at Geico and could tell how effective it was. We just sat there sucking our thumbs, Munger said. On delayed gratification, there's a lot to be said for doing things that bring you and your family enjoyment rather than saving every dime, Buffett said. It's not an unqualified course of action. He then added with a grin, I usually spend 2 or 3 cents of every dollar I earn. Advice to a young investment manager? Buffett said, don't take people who have an expectation of people that you can't meet. Make sure everyone is on the same page and establish clear ground rules. Munger launched into a story about Mozart. Munger said a 22-year-old man approached Mozart and said he wanted to write a symphony. Mozart told him he was too young to write a symphony. The man said, well, you wrote a symphony when you were 7. Mozart replied, well, I wasn't going around asking people how to do it. 12 p.m. The morning session adjourns. We meander over to the Hilton before flying out. That's when I saw the guy with the parrot. And returning to general news stories in the Triangle Business Journal. Durham Pharma set to expand as it gets fresh $30 million. This is written by Seth Thomas Gulledge. With a $30 million investment from Jim Goodnight's investment firm, one Durham pharmaceutical company is set loose to run multiple trials. Know Bio, that's KNOW Bio, a spinoff of Durham's Novan, has brought in $30 million in a private stock offering thanks to money coming from a single investor, SAS CEO Goodnight's investment firm, Reedy Creek Investments. Know and its portfolio of companies are working to develop a nitric oxide platform for a variety of therapeutic focuses. The funding follows around in December when its subsidiary, Vast Therapeutics, banked $15 million in a Series A from Japanese pharmaceutical company Shionogi and Company. According to John Oakley, chief financial officer of Know and Vast, the $30 million marks a transformational moment for the company. It's transformational, quite frankly, because now it really sets us loose to be able to run, he says. We have multiple pharmaceutical candidates, and we can really push those forward in parallel now, as opposed to one at a time. He says the company still plans to be highly selective on which candidates to finance. Oakley notes the size of the funding is remarkable for a lean company such as Know, which reports just 20 employees and a low six-digit burn rate. With Reedy Creek's investment, the company reports $40 million in cash and cash equivalents to finance its operations and development. Even with the influx, Oakley says the company plans to maintain its strategy of using a lean, energized team and relying on experts in their given fields. The company is planning to hire a vice president of drug development, chief medical officer, clinical operations specialist, a controller, and sales director, but will not exceed more than 25 personnel. The investment by Reedy Creek will make it the largest shareholder outside of the company and its directors, though officials declined to comment on what percent the firm holds, other than that they do not control a majority. Charlotte developer betting big on small South Carolina town. This is written by Ken Elkins. Rob Presley, a veteran developer of the South End area of Charlotte, believes now is the time for the restaurant and commercial side of nearby Rocky Hill, South Carolina, to shine. Presley has teamed up with three South Carolina residents and formed a partnership to create a restaurant or an event space in a historic but dilapidated cotton warehouse in Old Town Rock Hill. We believe that growth will continue to push in that direction from Charlotte, Presley says. Our hope is to do infill developments in downtown. In fact, the partners have already made an offer on at least one downtown Rock Hill property. Cotton Warehouse, a historic structure, part of which collapsed from neglect in 2008, marks the group's first downtown project. The partnership created a limited liability company called 302 Dave Lyle for a $1 million project to bring a restaurant or event space to the redeveloped 5,000-square-foot building. Cleanup and stabilization on the building has started, and construction is expected to begin next month. Partners want to save a Cotton Warehouse sign on the structure. 2-inch thick floorboards will also be reused in the renovations elsewhere in the building. It seems like a great spot for a really cool restaurant, says Justin Smith, another member of the South Street Partnership. But it could also end up as an event center. The building opened in 1900 as a farmers cooperative, according to the Herald newspaper in Rock Hill. In 2008, a section of the building collapsed, leaving an empty lot toward the building's rear. Triad sees rush of new hotels about to come online. At least one more downtown Triad hotel, the first of two under construction from the same developer, is expected to open before the end of the summer. Mittal Mike Patel of CN Hotel says the company's Hampton Inn and Suites at 235 North Cherry Street in downtown Winston-Salem should be ready sometime this summer. Patel said the exterior of the 119-room Winston-Salem Hotel is complete. We're trying to wrap up Winston-Salem, Patel says. Meanwhile, the construction is well underway on the company's 120-room Hampton Inn and Suites in downtown Greensboro. He says the Greensboro Hotel will be ready sometime in 2020. In March, the Carroll Companies opened 110-room Hyatt Place at its Carroll at Bellmead development across Eugene Street from First National Bank Field. Mayfair Street Partners opened a 75-room Hotel Indigo in the historic Pepper Building at 4th and Liberty Streets early this month. Other downtown hotels in the Triad under construction or on the drawing board include Carroll Companies Aloft near Carroll at Bellmead and the Westin on South Elm Street in Greensboro, and Mayfair's Hyatt Place adjacent to Hotel Indigo, as well as a Courtyard by Marriott at 640 West 4th in Winston-Salem, developed by Commercial Realty Advisors and Clarendon Properties. And with our time remaining, we'll read as much as we can of the executive profile, focusing on Ruffin Slater. Title, Founder and General Manager, Weaver Street Market. Family, Partner, Margaret. Education, BA, History, Duke University. First job, dishwasher. And this is written by Dane Huffman with the headline, His co-op launches a new venture in Raleigh. Ruff and Slater studied history at Duke University with no real intention of entering the food industry, but he had a keen sense that he wanted to help serve the community and found his way into the co-op food business. Soon he established Weaver Street Market in 1988, a concept well in front of the current natural food craze. Weaver Street has continued to expand and plans to open its first store in Raleigh this summer at the Dillon. Here, Slater shares how he started, what drives him, and how Weaver Street Market plans to thrive in the competitive Triangle grocery market. You went to Duke University to study history. What were your career plans? I didn't have any firm plans. I just wanted the opportunity to make our community a better place to live, and I wanted to do it with people I liked. Opening Weaver Street Market has allowed me to do both. What sparked you to start Weaver Street Market in 1988? I worked at a little co-op in Durham called People's Intergalactic Food Conspiracy No. 1 right out of college. I loved working there and realized the lack of natural food stores in our community presented an opportunity. That idea ultimately evolved into Weaver Street Market. How is the co-op governed? Our business is jointly owned by employees and customers who work together for the benefit of our community. Employees own half of the business and our customers own the other half. It's a very democratic structure. Every owner, including me, has a single vote. When did the Weaver Street Market co-op idea start to take off? Yeah, we found ourselves in a fortunate position when we opened in 1988. Natural and organic foods were just beginning to grow in popularity, and Weaver Street Market was at the forefront of that movement. At the same time, people started to recognize that businesses could be socially conscious. Being an integral part of the community and giving back is part of our DNA. In Raleigh this year, the generous support of our customers will help us donate 12,500 tokens for free meals at a place at the table. You had sales of $39.1 million last year, up from $37.8 million, but expenses rose from $11 million to $11.6 million, leading to a loss of $240,000. What do you project for 2019? We continue to enjoy strong sales. In 2019, our sales were up 6% for the year. We have invested significantly in the opening of the Raleigh location, and that has had a temporary impact on our expenses. And we'll go ahead and stop reading there as we run out of time for today's episode of the Triangle Business Journal. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Derek Frost, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, TriangleReadingService.org. So long until next time, and if you have any comments or questions, please give us a call at 919-832-5138.